And we're holding on page 62 in Yoma, about the middle of the page, still the middle of Osamache, the whole thing all about the Mon and the Slav. So we're still, yeah, so we've been talking about the Mon. Now the Gemara is kind of going back and forth over here. Between the Mon and the Slav, because after all, there is a certain connection between them. In Parshas B'Shalach, when they're first asking, then Hashem tells them he's going to give them both, as we learned yesterday, Mon in the morning, Slav in the evening. And then later on in Parshas Ba'alos Chol, so we have those two together. It's Bechlal, there's a discussion among Rishonim, so what's exactly the deal? If they had Slav the first time, already in Parshas B'Shalach, then what are they complaining about it again in Parshas Ba'alos Chol? So among others, there are Rishonim who learn, Tosfos discusses this in Erchin, where the Gemara brings the 10 times that the Jewish people tested Hashem in the Midbar, so Tosfos brings over there the possibility that maybe, in fact, the Slav, the first time in Parshas B'Shalach was only a one-time thing, and now a year later they're complaining about it, they want it again. Or the other possibility is that they did have it the whole time, but now they're saying they want more of it. Anyway, so the pasuk says, as far as the slav the second time in Parshas Ba'aloscha, the pasuk says, "Habaser adenu ben shineihem begomer." The meat, while the meat was still between their teeth, then all of a sudden many people died in a plague. But then you have a few psukim earlier when Hashem is telling them that they're going to have more meat than they know what to do with. Hashem says, "Ad chodesh yom," you're going to have a whole month. You're going to have a whole month. So hoketzad. So what is it? Did they die on the spot, or did it take a month until they die? So hoketzad. Beinanim nidonim la'alter mesu. So the average people, they were punished right away. They didn't have to suffer for very long. So they ate it and they died on the spot. The Rishoyim ended up suffering for a whole month before they finally died of it. Rashi on the pasuk, by the way, mentions that this is the way we have it in the Gemara over here is the way it is. It is the way it is in Mechilta. On the other hand, Sifri has it the other way around. The Beinanim were given a month, so they have a chance to do tshuva, and the Rishoyim dropped dead on the spot. Either way, we're only mentioning Beinanim and Rishoyim, Marsha points out, because the Tzadikim didn't ask for Slav in the first place. The whole thing we said yesterday was they asked for Slav, Shaloi Kahogin, improperly, and therefore the Tzadikim weren't going to have any part of it. Although the Gemara does mention further on the Tzadikim eating it and then being comfortable with it, so there must have been at least some Tzadikim, but perhaps, I guess, the vote would be then they're not the ones who we're talking about over here who died of it. There is, by the way, an interesting sikha in Chelek Tes Zayin where the Rebbe talks about the Pnimis in Yonim, that the Mon, which is bread, as we learned yesterday, represents Nigla, and the Slav, which was more of a luxury, represents Pnimis Ator. So therefore, so bread, they're asking for Kohoygen in the sense because a person needs to know Nigla in order to know what to do and what not to do. Not to say that Pnimiyas HaTorah is a luxury, but the Rebbe discusses over there in the Sikha that the way they were asking for it, they wanted to understand it on a behemiastic level, and it wasn't really the time for it yet because before Matan Torah anyhow, so therefore, in that sense, then it was, they're asking for it prematurely and improperly. Continues the pasuk about the pasuk continues when the slav fell again the second time in Parshas Ba'aloscha, it says vayishtuchu lahem shatoyach. So the simple meaning of it is that they spread it out. And in fact, the Gemara is going to bring an opinion soon that says that. But Amar Reish Lakish al tikru vayishtuchu elav vayishchatu. Don't read vayishtuchu. They spread it out, but rather vayishchatu. They were going to be shechted. This teaches us that the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning the euphemism for the Jewish people themselves, deserved shchita because they were acting in such a chutzpahdik way to Hashem. Marsha points out, you have in it, there is the matter of shchotei chutz. The Gemara brings in Cholin different opinions. Is it that we know the Torah tells us in Parshas Achrei Mois that if a person brings a korban outside the Mishkan, their chayiv kares, there's a machloikas in the Gemara in Cholin. Does that mean that in the Midbar, any time they wanted to eat meat, they had to bring it as a korban, and therefore they have no business eating the slav then in the first place, because the slav is not one of the types of birds that can be brought as a korban? Or is it, you have an opinion there the other way around, that in the Midbar, they don't even have to shech, they could eat without shchita, even only when they come into Eretz Yisrael, according to that mandamar, are they required are they required to start Shechtin? The Rambam paskens that way. So Maharshal says, evidently, our Gemara is going over here according to the first opinion, that they have no business, which is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel over there, that they have no business eating any meat in the Mishkan that's not being brought as a korban. So therefore, in that sense, they deserve shchita in the sense that now they're being over on the issur of shchote chutz, which is an issur kares. The Rif over here discusses differently, and he says that the vort was, rather, since as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, the slug being a bird is something that requires shchita, he learns that actually what it is they ate it without shchita. So therefore, the Gemara is saying that they themselves deserve shchita for eating, and basically then they're eating the vela. So, again, according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that wouldn't have been a problem, because according to him, in the Midbar, they were allowed to eat meat without shchita, only when they came into Eretz Yisrael, do you have the mitzvah of Zavatam and Korachom and Tzaymchah, but again, evidently, our Gemara would be going according to the other opinion, that it does require shchita, and that instead of shechting it, they're just eating it, without shchita, and that's a problem. So then the Pasuk says, the Pasuk had said, Vayishchitu lahem shatoy. So again, in the simple meaning of the Pasuk, it means they spread out layers and layers of slug in order to dry or whatever it is before they start eating it. So we douse in the word Vayishchitu. Now, what about we douse in it Meloshon Shchita, which, many times, Maharshal points out, many times when you have a Shurdish and Loshon Purdish, where you can interchange letters of the Shurdish, and it still has the same basic meaning. Keves and Kesev, Simla and Salma, and there are other examples. So therefore, the Gemara can douse in Vayishchitu as being Meloshon Shchita. What about Shatoyach? What about the next word, the layers? Tanim b'shmeidah b'shur ben korcha. Same thing. I'll take shatoyach el shochet. Don't read shatoyach that they spread it out in layers, but rather shochet that we're talking about something melamed shiyard lahem liyisrael amon dover shatoyach shchita, so that they fell together with the mon. They fell for the Jewish people something that requires shchita, namely that the slug are birds which require shchita. Actually, Eitz Yosef says the word im hamon doesn't really belong over here. The mon didn't, the slav didn't fall together with the mon. In fact, in that sicha earlier that Rebbe brings over there in the sicha and a footnote over there, a chiddush, he says the mon itself we find first fell on Sunday morning. But Hashem told them, for Erev, in the evening before that, you're already going to have slav. Therefore, the implication is that slav already, they started falling for them on Shabbos afternoon. And the Rebbe ties that in with that point, that since the slav represents Pnimiyas HaTorah, that's something more appropriate for Shabbos afternoon, as we know that we chaz a maimorim between Mincha and Ma'ariv on Shabbos. So anyway, the point is that it didn't fall with the mon, so it's not really appropriate to say im hamon in the Gemara. Anyway, so that's Rabbi Shrubin. So that's a burden, that's what we're going to discuss now. So you have two different gersois over here. One is that's Rebbe, and the other is that it's Reb Yosi. Anyway, this is where you're learning from that these slav required shchita. You have a different pasuk that in Tillim, when it tells over the story, Hashem made rain down on them as much meat, she'er means meat or flesh, like the dust, and Hashem gave them like the sand of the seas, winged birds to eat. And the Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Matam Adlamer was a vachta of a gomer kashet zvisicha. What do we learn? The part in Parashas Yud A, Hashem says you should shech as I've commanded you, and you never find in the Torah the details of how to shech. So Malavich and Istava Moshe, Allah Vesh Valakona, this teaches us that Hashem taught Moshe as part of Torah Shabbat Peh about the two primary organs in the neck, the esophagus and the windpipe, and that with a bird you have to cut at least most of one of those pipes, and in the case of an animal you have to cut at least most of the both of them. So you're telling me that you have to learn from the word shatoyach, which you're darshaning as shachait, that these birds required shchita. You know already it's part of Torah Shabbat Peh that birds require shchita. There's no reason for the pasuk to be hinting it over here. So how does Rebbe or Rabbi Yosi douch in the word shatoyach? He says elamatam alam shatoyach, exactly that. Miyamin melamed sheyored lahen mashtichin. It means that the slav fell down for them layers upon layers. In other words, Hashem made it very easy for them to gather. So here on the pasuk, it actually says that it means that they themselves spread it out in layers in order to dry, or whatever it is. But here, Rebbe is explaining that it means to begin with, when Hashem made the slav full, it was in such a way where there's layers on top of layers where they're very easy to gather. But not that you're learning shchita from it, because in fact you have a different source for that concept that birds require shchita. The Gemara actually there in Cholin brings different opinions on the subject, including, in fact, an opinion of Rebbe, who says over there that birds don't require shchita min haTorah. According to that opinion, they require shchita only d'rabban. So they would disagree that the halacha l'moshe Sinai included the detail that birds need to have one siman shechet. A chicken is a type of bird. So a chicken, that's the thing. So we know that you have to check the chicken, and you have to check at the minimum of most of one type. So the Gemara in Cholin mentions it there. There is an opinion that that is halacha l'moshe Sinai. There is an opinion that it's not, that it's only d'rabbanan with chickens and all other birds, slav included. What? Today, of course, everybody, when they're, in practice, we chickens. Chickens are birds. Other kinds of birds, I mean, lefiyarech, you don't really find people eating other kinds of birds so much. Okay, there are turkeys also, that's true. But you do have, I mean, there are various species of birds on which there is a masoda, and people do once in a while eat them. You have, here we're talking about the slav over here, which is a species of quail. The Gemara soon is going to mention there's four subspecies within it. So you have different, you need a masoda in order to eat birds. There are masoras that different communities in Europe had about various species of birds that they're kosher and even now, I mean, it's not very common, but people do sometimes eat them. Pheasant is another one, which is another species of quail. They have a few different kinds. Okay.
Everyone knows that any bird that's kosher.
Everybody knows you have to shecht it, right? The question is that d'oraisa, or is that d'oraisa as part of halacha l'moshe Sinai, or is it only d'rabbanan? I mean, for that matter, you know, in principle, al pi halacha, all you need is roiv echad ba'oif, roiv shnayim behem. Practically speaking, when you're shechting, you do, and when a shechet shecht, he does cut through the complete two pipes by both an animal and a bird, even though it's not strictly required up yalacha, because why do the bare minimum? You do a little less than you do a little bit less than that minimum, and you've got an avela over there. So why take the chance? Okay. Getting back to the mon, ksiv lechem uksiv shemen uktiv dvash. In three different places, the Torah describes what the mon was like. In Bishalach, it describes it as bread. In Baaloscha, it describes it as oil. And back in Bishalach, it describes it as honey. So what was it? It means it was any of the above. Lana orim lechem, for young men, it tasted like bread, which is best for young people. Luskenim shemen, for older people, for bread is not necessarily the healthiest food for them, but oil is, so therefore it tasted like oil. Luchinoikas dvash, for babies, it tasted like honey. For babies and young children, it tasted like honey because that's what they prefer. So even though we said before, the mon could taste like anything, Marsha says, in other words, it could taste like anything, but one thing at a time. So when an old person is eating it, for him it would taste like oil and so forth. Other Mephoshim explain somewhat differently. What the Gemara means is this was kind of the default taste. If you didn't have in mind something else, then this is what it would taste like depending on your age. If you had something in mind, then it would taste like that. Okay. Ksiv shlov v'korinan slov. Now let's go back to the slov. So the birds, the word is written in the Torah with a shin. Now, of course, in a Sefer Torah, you don't have a Kodesh, so it could be read just as if it was with a shin. So therefore, it's written in the Torah with a letter that could be a shin or a sin. We read it as a sin. So why is that? Why didn't the Torah write slug to begin with a samach, and then it would be unequivocally mean slug? So I'm going to put it in tzaddikim oichel moisiv shalva, because the word shlug, as if we read it with a shin, is related to the word shalva, which means peace. The tzaddikim would be able to eat it, and they would be at peace. Or rishoyim, or chlonoisei, v'domim lahem kesilvim. On the other hand, the rishoyim won't eat it, and it would be like thorns to them, because that's the word silvim is an Aramaic word that means thorns. So therefore, that's why you have this this difference between the kri and ksiv, in effect, where you have where you have slav versus shlav. So Marsha points out now, before we said that they were chayev shchita for asking for this, but we find again there was two times when they had slug. The difference is the first time it was before Matan Torah. So therefore Hashem didn't hold it against them if they're asking for meat. Fine, they asked Shaloi Kahogan, therefore Hashem gave it to them kind of grudgingly, only in the evening, like we learned before, and only a little bit, like we learned before, but nevertheless they weren't actually punishable for it. When it comes to, and therefore in Parshas B'Shalach, it doesn't actually, so the difference would be that the first time it's not to seal them, it's not like thorns to them yet, because nobody is doing such a serious Avera by asking for it. On the other hand, the one in Parshas Baaloscha, which is after Matan Torah, there they have no business asking for it in the first place, because like we said, during the Midbar, after Matan Torah, they're also to have the Sar Taiva, therefore they're being punished, and therefore for the Rishoyim, it becomes like harmful thorns. The Rish points out over here, I mean, there may be a difference between Tzaddikim and Ksherim. We said before the Ksherim, which are the Beinanim, they're the ones who lasted for a month, or according to a different opinion, they're the ones who died on the spot. And here we're talking about the Tzaddikim. There are the actual Tzaddikim who ate it once it's there already. There are Tzaddikim who ate it as well and are getting to it what they should, and for them, they're eating it the shop. Let's talk more about the slav. Amar Rav Chanan bar Abba, or Rava, arba mine slav hen. There are four kinds of birds in the slav family. The Elohen shivli, the kivli, psioni, or slav. So these are different kinds of small, fatty birds. In English, you have, there's quail, there's another related bird called partridge, another one called pheasant, different ones, like I was just saying, different communities in Europe had mesoras about many of those birds that they are kosher, and so perhaps just any of those are included in the four that the Gemara is mentioning over here. Mali Mikulu Shivli Griam Dikulu Slav. The best quality out of all the four of them is the Shivli, and the least quality out of them is the Slav. Which means, like we said, like we learned yesterday, since Hashem was giving it to them only wasn't giving it to them for Hogan, because they shouldn't have asked for it in the first place. Therefore, says Marisha, therefore Hashem gave them the least best out of the four of them. It's still pretty fatty and delicious, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, but nevertheless, Hashem could have given them one of the other three species, but he was giving it to them, Shaloi Kahogan, because they were asking for it to begin with, Shaloi Kahogan. Vahabiki Tziporta, Pisioni, by the way, the Gemara mentions in a different context, you have the famous thing where it says, where the Gemara says that a person can be feeding his father Pisioni, these delicious birds, but he loses his place in Olam Haba because he acts disrespectfully towards his father, and Rashi brings over there an example where somebody is doing that, and his father asks him, where do you have the money for that? And he says, basically, shut up and eat. So we see that Pisioni is a very delectable kind of bird to eat. Anyway. Vahaviki tziporta, the slav is the size of a tziporta, which is a type of small bird. Meforshim explains tziporta is like a general term for the little songbirds that you see around. Umalchile, so after you shecht it, you salt it. Umosvile betanura, you put it in the oven to roast. The topach, it swells up because of all the fat in it. So it swells up in the oven, the ravi, and it gets bigger and bigger, add the moli leva tanura, until even though it starts off as a small bird, it fills up, and it expands and fills up the entire oven. Umasculate, then you take it out of the oven, umosculate atresa, or atresa rifti, you put it on top of 13 slices of bread, in order to absorb the fat and the grease, or basrice the kulu, even the bottom piece of bread, you can't eat it by itself because it's so soaked full with schmaltz from the bird that you can only eat it together with something else. And the higher pieces of bread, all the more so. So everything, even down to the bottom piece, is thoroughly soaked through with the schmaltz from the bird, so that you can't eat any of these pieces of bread by themselves anymore. You have to eat them with something else. So, what? It's a milo. In other words, it's a milo. In other words, that this is such a, even though this is, we're saying, it's the least delicious out of the four birds, even that one is so fatty and delicious. And that's what Hashem gave them in the Midbar. So the Gemara tells, in later times, the Chachamim also, Hashem made it available to the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda, Mashbech led Bene Dani, Rabbi Yehuda would find slav birds among his barrels of wine. So that way he's able to enjoy this treat as well. Why Dafka has barrels? Ben Yehoyada points out that it's in the schus of his learning Torah, where one of the things, Torah, is compared to his wine, so therefore in the schus of that he got to eat the slav. Rav Chista Mashgach LeBenitzivi, Rav Chista would find it among his wood, in his wood storehouse. Why Dafka there? Ion Yaakov mentions a point that the Gemara elsewhere mentions, the Gemara mentions in Gittin, in the Sugya about the Churban over there, it mentions over there about the three rich people in Yerushalayim, where each one was going to supply the city with enough resources to last through a siege of 21 years, and one of them was going to supply wood, and the Gemara mentions over there that the wood is the most important of all. We see that Rav Chista would give all his keys to his storehouses to an attendant of his, but not the key to his wood storehouse. He personally would keep an eye on things over there. So therefore, in keeping with that, is why Hashem had him find the slav there. Ben Yehoyada points out, practically speaking, that means he's the only one who's going to find them. Otherwise, his shamish might find the slav and eat them like this. Since only the chista goes in there, then Hashem makes it reserved for him. He points out also, Torah is also compared to a tree, which is another reason why Rav Chista has them found among his wood that comes from trees. Anyway, Rava have a rogu, maisi leit saida b'chol yemim e'agim. Rava would have, every day, a trapper would bring him slav birds that he found out in the meadows. So these birds would fly around over there, and every day this trapper would go and catch some of them and bring them to Rava. Ha'hu yemim e'agim, one day, the guy didn't bring any of them to Rava. Omer my high, so Rava wonders what's going on. Solik l'igra, he went up onto the roof, maybe to have time to think by himself what's going on. Anyway, Shami the Yanuka de Komar, he overheard a child saying a posik that he had learned in Cheder, Shamaiti Bakirgas Bitni, the grammar. I heard it and my stomach was trembling. This is the Novi in context is talking about Tsaris that happened to the Jewish people, Mechamas Gogomogog, other things of Chevle Mashiach, and he's saying, I'm worried about it, but I have bitochen that the Eibishter is going to see us through it. Anyway, the point is, Rava heard that posik, and we know when you hear a posik from a little kid, it's like a miniature Nebuah, like we find by Mordechai with Haman, and many other examples. Omar, so Rava realizes, so what's this bad news that this kid's posik is hinting at? Shmamina noch nafshe de Rav Chista. That means that Rav Chista had passed away. Rav Chista was one of Rava's Rebbeim. He was also Rava's Shveh. Rava married his daughter. So, and he realized, behind Udami Inshi, this is like people say, Ubedil Rabba, Ochel Talmida, only for the sake of the Rebbe does the Talmud get to eat it. So in other words, Rava realized all this time, why did the Eibishter provide me slav through this trapper was in the schus of my Rebbe and my father-in-law Rav Chista. Now that he's gone, then I don't have that schus anymore.
Was the one that
the one who was the gangster was Rish Lakish, and he wasn't, he married Rabbi Yochanan's sister. What you have is the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that one time Rav Chista had his daughter sitting on his lap while he was teaching two of his Talmidim, Rami Bachoma and Rava, and he asks the girl, which one of these two Talmidim do you want to marry? And she says, both of them. And Rava realized that this is a little kid, has a miniature Nevuah. The Gemara mentions over there, Nitna Nevuah, Manavim, and Nitna Lakhtanim, Lashoytim. So he said, in that case, I want to be the second one. So in the end, when they got older, she married Rami Bachoma. Later on, he divorced her or passed away, and then Rava married them. It all came true. Okay. Continuing with the monk, one pasuk says that when the dew fell on the machna by night, then the mon would fall on top of it. So implying that you had dew on the bottom and then the mon sitting on top of it. But in Parshas Beshalach, it describes the other way around. It says that when the layer of dew rose up, when it evaporated, then they saw the mon over there, implying that the dew was on top of the mon. That's what it means. Talmud l'mayla v'talmud l'mata. There was dew above and dew below. So it was like as if the mon was in a box, so this way it would stay fresh for them. This is one of the sources why we cover the Lechem Mishnah on Shabbos, is because the Lechem Mishnah represents the mon, and just like the mon was covered on bottom and on top, so we do with the chalas. The other official reason we cover the chalas is a matter of halacha. Normally, the bracha on bread should come before the bracha on wine. Here, we make kiddush before we make tamotzi. So therefore, so to speak, in order not to embarrass the bread, as if to say, we don't have the bread there yet, then we cover it as though symbolically, therefore, it's not there yet, and it's legitimate to make the bracha on wine. Anyway, but that has to do with this. Ben Yehoyada points out, by the way, you know, the gematria of the word tal is 39. Twice that makes 78, which is the gematria of lechem, which is what we said. Mon was the bread that Hashem gave them. So therefore, that's why you have to have two layers of dew, one on top and one on bottom. The pasuk continues, describing the mon in Parshas Bashalach. It says it was dak mechuspas, it was a fine stuff, mechuspas. Now Rashi explains on the pasuk over there, a couple of Rashi and different Mefarshim discuss over there different possibilities what mechuspas means. Among them is that it means that it was covered, he explains over there that mechuspas can come from a word that means covered up, because like we said, it was inside a box. There's a word in Gemara terminology, you have a word chafisa, which means a type of box or container that you put things in, so mechuspas would be like it's inside such a container. So what's this mechuspas? Amar Shlokish, Dovish Nimoyach al Pisa Seyad. Means the mon was such fine stuff, it would melt on the palm of your hand. So we darshan, in other words, the word mechuspas, we're darshaning for the memches, stands for nimoyach, melt, and the pei samach stands for pass, meaning the palm of the hand. The point being, in other words, Marshall says, it was such a fine, ethereal type of food. It was a ruchniistic of food, that therefore, as soon as you put it on your hand, it would melt away. Rabbi Yochanan says also that it means it was absorbed into all 248 limbs of a person. The word mechuspas, mem ches samach pei samach, is gematria 248. But the Gemara asks mechuspas tova habi. You have a shuruk in there. Doesn't that mean that there's a vav in the way it's written in the Torah? And in that case, it comes out to more than you have an extra six. And the answer is, Amar Nachman, right? So, machaspas ksiv. The fact is, it's written in the Sefer Torah without the vav. We pronounce it with a kobutz. But we don't actually write out, the vav is not actually written out in the Sefer Torah. So yes, the five letters that it's written with, mem ches samach pei samach, equals 248. So Marsha adds the point that, like this, you have different kinds of foods are good for different parts of the body. The Rambam mentions this in Hilchos Deis, for example. The Gemara mentions it here and there also, that you have certain kinds of food that are good for one part of the body and not so good for the other. Here, the mon being a ruchniistic of food, then therefore it was good for every organ of the body. That's also why we said that before it could taste like anything, because it was a ruchniistic of food, and therefore it could transform into any taste, and therefore it could benefit every part of the body. So in this connection, the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan, the pasuk says in Tilim, when it describes the mon, lechem abirim ochal ish. It says the food of abirim, where abirim literally means mighty ones, ochal ish, people, a person or people ate. So why are we calling it lechem abirim? So lechem shemalach ha'asharis, oichonoi se divir abakiva. So the Abakiva says, it means that this is the food that the Malachi Asharis eat. So the Malachi Asharis are called Abirim, the mighty, powerful ones. And now this food that usually is reserved for the Malachim, here human beings ate them. Marsha explains, according to that way of looking at it, now the pasuk continues. So you have the pasuk goes like this. Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish, Seida Sholach Lahem Lasoiva. The food of Abirim, a man ate. He sent them provisions, enough to be satisfied. So why first is it Ish in Lashon Yochid, and then Lahem in Lashon Rabim? So Marsha explains, because you have like this, you have the individual people, the Ish, the Yechidei Segula, they weren't asking for mon just because they're hungry. They want something ruchni, stick from Hashem. So therefore, Hashem gave it to them. They have the food that the Malach HaSharis eat, meaning they're the ones who are eating lechem abirim, ochal ish, and therefore it's ish for Lashon Yochin. The rest of the people that they just wanted in order to be able to fill themselves up, so therefore it's seida shalach lahem l'soiva, for them, it's not the food of the Malachim, for them it's more gashmi, stick a kind of food, and they just ate it in order to fill up. Therefore, lahem in the plural. So that's that's Divrei Rav Akiva. That's how Rav Akiva learns that Lachem Abirim means the food of the Malachim. But when they told over Rabbi Shmuel what Rabbi Akiva had darshan, he tells them, Su'uva imru Rabbi Akiva, Akiva te'isa. He tells them, go tell Rabbi Akiva you're making a mistake. Do the Malachi Asharis eat bread? You have the pasuk when Moshe describes how he, when he was on Har Sinai and I didn't eat bread. Why not? Because in Shemayim they don't eat and you always have to follow the local minhag. Now, Marsha points out there are various psukim that you have here. This is the pasuk in Parshas Ekev where Moshe is describing this first 40 days on Har Sinai. Earlier, you have in Parshas Kisisa, you have it describes how when Moshe went to get the luchas, went up to ask Hashem to forgive the Jewish people and then to get the luchas shnias. It also says over there he didn't eat bread. So why is the Gemara not bringing that pasuk? Marsha explains because there it's primarily talking about the time when he's asking Hashem to forgive the Jewish people. Fine, you could say he didn't eat bread because he's busy fasting and davening to Hashem. Here, on the other hand, we want to stress that he's not eating because in Shemayim they don't eat. Therefore, it brings the pasuk referring to the first 40 days when he was there. There's no anger of Hashem at the Jewish people, yet they haven't yet made the Egel. So therefore, the fact that he's not eating there is not because he's fasting to ask Hashem to forgive them, but because in Shemayim they don't eat. So what are you telling me? The Malachi Asharis eat bread. So now, doesn't Rabbi Akiva realize that the Malachim don't eat bread either? What's the argument between them? The Ramban on the Pasuk in Parshat B'Shalach explains, of course they both agree Malachim don't eat gashmiyistic food. They're men in Yiziv Ashkina. They live off the Ur Eliki. But Rabbi Akiva holds that Ur Eliki becomes physicalized and becomes something that we could describe in our terms as bread. And Rabbi Shmuel says not even that. You can only describe it as Ziva Shchini. You can't describe it as anything physical. Daniel Yodis says it a little bit differently. Look, I mean, Rabbi Akiva is saying this drasha in public. In public, people can easily misinterpret such things and think that Malachim are just a different kind of human being. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel is telling him it's fine to understand on a pneumistic level to describe the food of Malachim as bread, but don't give such a drasha in public where people are going to misinterpret it. Anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel says, "Elamani makayim lechem abirim." So, what does the word lechem abirim mean? Al tikru lechem abirim ela lechem evorim. Don't read abirim, but rather evorim. Lechem shenivla baramach evorim, because this is bread that's absorbed into the 248 limbs, like we said before. And in that case, Marsha says the same thing as far as lechem abirim ochal ish. Say the shalach lahem wasoiva, same, Rabbi Shmuel would hold of the same distinction in the pasuk. Only the Yechidah Skula have this that it's nivla baramach evorim, and for them it's a completely ruchnistic food, whereas for everybody else it's wasoiva, it's more of an ordinary food. So the Ella, so continues Rabbi Shmuel, Mani Makayim Yosid Tia Lachal Azinecha. What about though the Torah describes later on in Parshas Kisetze, it says that you have to have a shovel or a spade together with your equipment, and you have to go to the bathroom, and then when you go to the bathroom, you have to dig and cover it, implying that in the Midbar they had to go to the bathroom. If it's Nivla, but I'm asking God, what bathroom? So, it means when they ate food that Goyish merchants would sell them. You'd have Goyish merchants are traveling here and there through the desert. Sometimes the Jews would buy food from them. So if a person ate that food is not mon. Therefore, they'd have to go to the bathroom afterwards. That was not Nivla Bramach Evorim. That a lot of cattle also, yeah, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, he says, I don't understand why we even have to resort to Tagru Masoilam. If they ever shefted any of their cattle, then also, wouldn't there be the same thing? Different Goyish Bedouins and then Bedouins and merchants and whatnot you have traveling through the Midbar all the time. So, on the other hand, Rabbi Loza ben Pasur, so Pauta Oimer, Rabbi Loza ben Pauta says no. No, as a matter of fact, even the food that they bought from the Goyish merchants, sure, they bought such food, but even that, the mon would dissipate it and make it, in other words, the mon would have an effect on that food in their stomachs, that also, they wouldn't have to go to the bathroom because of it. So what about this pasuk about that implies that they had to go to the bathroom? That would be la'achash sohu. After they acted badly, and in particular, Rashi says after they complained in Parshas Chukas, where they said, "V'nafshenu kotzav alachem akloikel," and Rashi mentions over there on the pasuk that they're complaining. They say the mon is the mon gets absorbed completely into your body. Inevitably, our stomachs are going to burst because you're going to have all this waste inside us, which is not going anywhere. So now, after that, so then, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Amarti, Shiyu Yisrael, Lefanei Kamalach HaYashoris. I wanted the Jewish people should be like the Malach HaYashoris, and not have to ever go to the bathroom. But after Moya Sisim Kach, you didn't do like that, you're demanding that you want to. Asher, Ani Matriya Cheschem, Gimel Parsois. Now, not only are you going to have to go to the bathroom, but you're going to have to schlep 3 parsa to do that. Why 3 parsa? Because that's the size of Machne Yisrael, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second. Dichtiv, the last place where it says they camped before they crossed the Yarden is from Beis HaYishimas until Oval HaShittim. I personally saw that place, or Tlosa Parasivu. That area is 3 parasa, so therefore we learn from that that the Machna was 3 by 3 parasa, which is around, a parasa is around 2.5-3 miles, so you're talking about 8 or 9 miles. Now, so you could say, so what? So you live near the edge of the Machna, all you have to do is go right outside the Machna and go to the bathroom. The problem is, for Tonim, we learn in a Braisa, Kshehin Nifnin, in the Midbar, when people wanted to go to the bathroom, Ein Nifnin, Loi Lefnehem, Loi Letzidehem, they can't go towards the front of the Machna, or towards the sides, because they never know which direction they're going to be going next. Whichever direction the Oren starts going, and whichever direction the cloud starts going, is the direction they're going to go. They might continue going forward, that meaning, in other words, that Yehuda is camped on the east. They might continue going towards the east. They might instead turn towards the north or the south. One thing they're never going to do, they're never going to turn backwards. Therefore, the only way they could go to the bathroom would be behind in an area where they had already been. So therefore, it comes out. So if you have somebody, for example, in Yehuda, Yisachar or Zvulun, who was in the front of the Machna, he has to walk all the way 3 parasa to get to the back of the camp, and to go to the bathroom over there. Ben Yoyada points out, not only that, so what are you going to say? So let's say, for example, Shevet Dan has an easy time of it. Can't they just go? And he says, because no, the vote is every group would have to have their own area to use for bathrooms, for latrines, because after all, you have to have tzniyas. You can't have people being too close to each other and seeing each other. So therefore, they needed an area. So therefore, like Yehuda would be given an area right outside the back of the Machne. The Shvatim on the side would be given an area further back, and Don and him and his group would be all the way further back. So it comes out anybody who wants to go to the bathroom has to schlep out the same 3 parsa. This is all a result of the Gemara saying, because they were complaining and saying that the mon is going to make us explode, as the Gemara will continue next with the next line about that, which we'll learn tomorrow, Baz Hashem. What? Yeah, we'll get there tomorrow. Incidentally, Mefoshim points out over here at the beginning of the Masechta, we learned that one reason why Moshe had to wait a few days. The Gemara brought at the beginning of the Masechta two different opinions, whether Moshe had to remain for a few days inside the clouds on Har Sinai before Hashem started teaching him the Torah or not. And the Gemara mentioned over there the point, Lamarek Achilah Shemeyam, to clean out his inside so that he's pure. So he's pure in order to be learning from Hashem himself. That would disagree with our Gemara over here, that they didn't have waste and they didn't have to go to the bathroom until much later in the game. Okay.
Yeah. It's
yeah, we can see from here, yeah. Okay. Yonyem Mashiach Go'ola. What is today? Your Dalit, thank you. Yesh Oimim, that ever talks about in a letter, that Yesh Oimim, after Tchias HaMeisim, will be the Yoyim HaDin HaGodol, when a person is going to be judged for all his Meisim. Others say that every person is judged right after he passes away, so therefore there's no need for an extra judgment. What does it mean? The Yoyim HaDin, that we talk about Lasid Lavei, means the day of punishment. The day when the Rishoyim are going to be punished, when the Goyish Rishoyim in particular are going to get punished for what they did. And Yesh, and in that, Yesh Oimim, that Yoyim HaDin, is only for Umas HaOlam, not for Jews. So you have 3 different opinions of what the Yom HaDin consists of, exactly. The Rebbe doesn't expand on it in this letter, but there is actually an opinion that says, even if we say that there is a Yom HaDin after, even if we say a person is judged after 120, nevertheless, there still has to be a later Yom HaDin, because you have all the after effects of what a person did during his lifetime that also have to be factored in. You can have a person did something, L'tovah, or the opposite, which has effects long after he passed away, and therefore there would have to be an extra din for that. So No, that would be funny. No, because for Jews also, you have Latova, a person you think of. For example, Moshe Rabbeinu was judged, was judged and given tremendous reward after 120, but you also have all the good that he brought into the world from then until now has to be factored in as well. I guess the other opinion might say all of that, the Ibishka factors in to begin with because he knows the future, so therefore all of that can be factored in right there after 120. We're up to a new simen in Tetzah Shulchan Aruch, the dinim of Kiddush. The Amitzvah says in the Torah to declare Shabbos holy with words. Zocher es yom Shabbos b'kadshei, that means you have to mention Shabbos. So you mention at the beginning with Kiddush, and also when it's ending with Havdalah. The Chachamim made the Takana that this should be done both at the beginning and the end on a cup of wine. D'oraisa, in other words, you'd be yotze just by mentioning it. What we do in particular Yom Kippur night, we only say Vayichulu because we can't make Kiddush on a cup of wine there.
Okay.